Hey, Zero Block 30 listeners, you can find us every Tuesday and Friday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Prime members can also listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Welcome back to another edition of Zero Block 30. It's the first edition where Kate and I are both in Chicago. Woo! For the last 6 years of the show, or five and a half, I guess, with Kate. They have both, Cons and Kate have both lived in the New York City area. Now Kate and I are living in Chicago. Cons is still rocking it in Hoboken doing daddy. It's his first time back. I think you missed like 3 weeks or something like that. First week back, Cons. I got to say, brother, every time you send a picture, it makes me happy.
I know.
Walk us through your first couple week experience of being about being a papa.
All right. So, I mean, it's been good. It's been great. So throughout the pregnancy, I don't know how, if this is sharing too much or I'm going to get yelled at about this later. We'll see. I guess we'll find out. She can hear me, so I'll probably get a text here if it's going off the rails.
She's busting in the door. How dare you?
Yeah. So, you know, we were just always very much, I don't want to say on alert, but, you know, keeping a close eye on things during the pregnancy. Maggie was not necessarily growing at the rate, or I guess she was just like in the smaller percentile, but nothing was wrong. And my whole time I was thinking like, well, you look around the world, like not everybody's the same size. Some people are just smaller than other people. Not a big deal.
Like Nick.
Yeah.
Long story short, we got to a point where they're like, all right, at this point, anytime you come in for a growth scan or an ultrasound, you need to be ready to go. And this was like anything beyond 36 weeks. For those who don't know, a full pregnancy is 40 weeks, which is 10 months, which is weird that like colloquially everybody's like, oh, 9 months of pregnancy when it's actually 10 months.
So essentially you guys...
So you don't feel bad drinking your first month because the first month just doesn't count. You drink as much as you want. And then 9 months of taking it serious.
But essentially after 36 weeks, you guys were like the fighter jet pilots that get stationed on an island in the Pacific. And they're like, if the alarm goes off, you're off to Korea.
Excellent military tie-in.
Thank
Kate.
You.
Excellent
Thank you.
Work.
That was fantastic. Yeah. Yeah. So, like, 36 weeks is like considered full term. So we were in for, I guess it was at 38 weeks. We were in for a scan, and the ultrasound tech was like, "Why don't you guys hang out in the waiting room for a little bit? I want to talk to the doctor." And sure enough, they brought us back in the room. They're like, yeah, you're going to need to go to the hospital today.
See, she's got
to
go in that move and be like, hey, I just need to use the restroom real quick. You can't go in there and say, I got to go talk to the doctor because I found something real fucked up.
Because you two were scuttlebutt immediately, right? You were like, something's up, right?
Because you're nervous, man. And like luckily, anything, a small little look and you're like, oh my God, everything's wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, luckily we'd gotten everything ready, so we were ready. But I still thought once we got past a certain point and our doctors had told us a few things, they thought it was going to go to the full 40. And we're like, okay. So it was a little abrupt. So we went that Tuesday afternoon. We got to the hospital at 4:30. She was induced. Baby didn't show up until Thursday morning at 4:30 in the morning. And then we didn't leave until Saturday. I will say this. I guess every hospital is different. Our hospital, we were very fortunate. I had a bed. So everyone, all the guys are like, oh, you know,
this
good
soft,
luck sleeping in a chair.
Generation of dads, just soft.
That's the officer wing.
Yeah,
the enlisted
exactly
wing.
Right.
You sleep
the
on the
O
floor
club.
On a cot.
Yeah. But, they make you actually go
inside. I had a bed,
so
I was fine.
But so she's born, and you're over the moon.
He's born.
And
I will say, so Alex had a fever during her labor process. So the baby went to NICU just as a precaution. She was completely fine. And then, so she was in the NICU, came in the NICU. So we had her for one night bouncing between the nursery and our room. And then Saturday morning, unbelievable. I've signed more paperwork to lease a car. They're like, okay, you can go now.
Yeah.
All right.
It feels illegal. You're
make
like,
sure
are
you,
you
know how
sure?
to strap the baby in.
And you want to be like, I'm not responsible enough to leave this place with a human.
No matter how old you are and no matter what you do in life, you're like, they shouldn't be letting me do this.
And this will be your second time soon and you'll still be nervous.
Still
as hell.
Feel the same way. But congratulations, Con. Yeah. That's awesome. She is a beaut. Mm-hmm. She is the cutest. So
thank
very
you.
Exciting.
Thank you. So, I mean, in 5 days, it'll be a month.
Holy shit. God,
listen. Dude. Yeah. I'm, you know, knock on wood, she's a good kid so far. And I just feel so, so blessed that I have Alex to do this with. I don't want to say it's been easy, but like you hear all these horror stories about you're not going to sleep and this, that, and the other thing. I mean, I don't know. It's been challenging. Sure, it's been a change in how our lives are, but we talk every day. We're like, all right, we established early on, like, all right, I'm going to take this shift and then I'm going to go to sleep and you're going to take this shift. So we're both getting 6 to 8 hours of sleep at night. She's been out to dinner, I think, like 5 times this weekend. I was at Large's house from 1 till 10 o'clock. I don't know. Maybe people are going to yell at me that I'm a bad parent for that. She wasn't drinking. That was just her mother and I. Yesterday we went to a friend's house. So like she's out and about. Who knows? It's only been a month. Maybe things will change and she's going to become a terrorist and we won't be able to do anything with her. But overall, I just really feel, you know, blessed. If I was doing this by myself, I might be singing a different tune. But Alex, I mean, you should see how organized the changing table. And then Alex did all of that. She completely set it all up to where it's like, you know where everything is. Everything's ready to go. It's all stocked. Certainly learning new things every day, learning how she is as a baby. But also, like, if she's crying, she's either got a crap in her pants. You know, if we look at the Been clock, there. We can generally see, like, maybe she's hungry. And she doesn't like the changing table. I think it's a little too cold for her.
I think the same two things go for a gunnery sergeant.
Yeah, true.
They either poop their pants or they're hungry, and you take care of that, and they're fine.
Well, good, man. I think you're exactly right. It's just the first month. Things are going to get much, much worse. It's not going to be that smooth forever.
I hope
it is. But I think that that's one of the things about being an older parent, too. Like, when you're going into it, you know that you have to be more. When you're 22 like I was, I had no idea how to even take care of myself, and then you throw another kid in. I wish I would have waited. Sorry, Kelsey, but I wish I would have waited later in life past the age of 23 to do it.
So I think that's a really good point too, because, you know, it's the summer, and if I was like 26 and seeing all my friends down the shore out and about doing crazy things, I would probably feel a lot different. I'm 38, you know, again, we've been able to do things with her. We haven't been cooped up in the house, but I do think part of what's made it an easier transition is the fact that I'm older. So I would agree with you there. This would be a different story, I think, if I was 24, 25. So I can't imagine these people who have kids that young, and it's different strokes for everybody, but overall it's been a great experience. I love her to death. When she looks at you, And you get a smile, or, you know, she squeezes your finger really tight.
Gas smile, even a gas smile. You're like, hell yeah.
Hell yeah. Well, doesn't even matter. I love it all. Congratulations to you and Alex. That's awesome. Thank you. We've been thinking of you guys every day. I'm like, more pictures, please. More pictures, please.
Today's show is brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka. And in partnership with New Amsterdam Vodka, Barstool Sports is offering much-needed assistance to support the renovation of a selected VFW's post-common area. We're also calling on our audience to help with this program because New Amsterdam Vodka has pledged $50,000 to renovate a VFW post, and Stoolies can join in too by making their own contribution. So if you're interested in donating or if you want to apply for the grant, go to barstoolsports.com/wins for warriors to help us reach our goal. We're super excited about this. Me, Kate, and Cons, we're going to be involved every single step of the way with one of these VFWs. We're going to be going hanging out. We're going to show up to the videos. We're going to do all kinds of stuff. We're going to be doing interviews with people. It's going to be great, and we want you to be a part. So again, donate, even if it's just for my birthday. My birthday is today, Wednesday, while you're listening. If you're listening on release day, it's today. So even if you want to give me a little something, I don't need anything fancy. Just get me some pledges there. Get me some donations by going to barstoolsports.com/wins for warriors. Throw in $5, $10. If you want to prove to everybody that you're super rich, donate like $10,000. Whatever you feel like you can do, do it. Go to barstoolsports.com/wins for warriors to help us reach our goal. It's going to be great. We already are so happy with everybody that has already applied for the grant, and we can't wait to go through and figure out who's going to get it. It's going to be awesome.
Between that and Nick's son, it's overload. Overload.
And
your kids are cute too.
No, they're all right. Kate had her big move. How did that go?
Oh man.
I know it went really bad.
weren't ready when the movers showed up. There were so many things. The drive itself went smooth. At the cat and the toddler, like, unbelievable. No crying the whole time. Like, little dude crushed it. Except that we get here, we're like 45 minutes outside Chicago. The iPad dies. We're out of snacks.
And this was right after you had texted the ZBT group chat. Everything's going great. We haven't had any problems. I was like, what are you thinking?
Dumb move, because immediately after that, we see a sign that says, crash ahead, all lanes closed. Like, people park getting out. It was like 100 degrees on the highway. And the wheels, I got in the back seat, and I was like making them pretend sandwiches. I was like trying anything I got. I don't know. Anyway.
Pretend sandwiches?
I don't know. That's my, I get him to like make us food. And that occupies his mind.
That's cool.
Yeah. I'm like, you got to stop crying. Like, we need two hoagies right now. You got to put provolone on him. And he's like, oh. Okay.
That's a legit deployment game. Like, what do you want to eat when you get home?
Yeah.
Oh, well, let me see.
I had him throwing rocks at a stick, like like an infantry lance.
He'd be really good at it, yeah.
And then we get there, and the movers came the next day to, like, drop off the stuff. And it's so hot. So I have the AC blasted, and all of a sudden the power goes out in the entire house. And I'm like, oh, my God, I'm down at the breaker box. Pat and the baby they were over at PFT's house. PFT got a puppy. So they were over there hanging out with the puppy while I'm dealing with the movers. And
adorable puppy, too.
Power goes out, and I'm hitting the breaker box. These guys, it was three Russian dudes, like big-ass Russian dudes that were like, duh, duh. They kept, like, smoking cigarettes dangling. And they were, like, sweating their asses off. I'm like looking up to see if there's power outage, blah, blah. It was me. I forgot to turn I forgot you have to like turn power on in your home.
Hi.
I was the problem. It was me. And so other than that, but I love the neighborhood. I love the house. I'm going on 14 slushies and no sleep over the last 3 days, but it's good. We like so far so good. It's been like a shit show, but I think there's certain things I attribute to the military of like keeping this level of calm, even when things are going to shit. And things have been going, and I'm just like, well, I'm kind of dead inside. So
I don't know how you're keeping it together.
I don't know about you're dead inside, but you just think like, all right, well, let's just figure this out and get through it. And that's maybe, you know, the fact that I was in the Army has helped me through this process is that, okay, let's just talk about it, figure out a solution, and we'll power through and we'll get through it. And maybe that's a wrong way to look at it, but
yeah,
it works for us.
I've had a couple small stress spikes, but overwhelming. I'm like, oh, well, this is what it is right now. Well, thanks.
See, and you guys are being way more cavalier about it. I'm fucking miserable.
Yeah.
Like, it's just every aspect of, like, the move and getting things together. It seems like, I told Annalise right before we started, it seems every 15 minutes there's something wrong that shouldn't be going wrong that you have to figure out a solution for. But you're right, Cons. Like, without that background of, things could be a shit ton worse than they currently are. I'd be like freaking out.
Yeah.
Like you're watching your money just completely deplete.
Yeah.
Like with every single time somebody, I'm pretty sure every time somebody calls my phone, I owe somebody like $2,500.
Yeah.
Like every time it rings. And like this dude was like,
who do I have to write a check for now?
There was a guy that was supposed to come over to my house to trim a couple little trees. Wait, hold on. These motherfuckers. All right. So the cursing jar thing is over for today.
Yeah, yeah.
Listen to how big of pieces of shit my former neighbors are. I talk to these people. One neighbor to my left, I don't think I ever spoke to them once in the 2 years that I lived in the house.
Yeah.
The other one, it was when I moved in, and they're like, lots of people move in and out this house. We'll see how long you guys can stick it out for. And they were the ones when I was putting the house for sale that I really wanted to prove them wrong and just keep the house, pay the mortgage, and just have it as mine so they wouldn't be right. So we're in this process of moving. We're up here. We can't take care of anything in Texas, obviously, because we're here. So we have things that we have to fix about the pool, things about the house, which happens everywhere. Well, one of the things that the people who are buying the house wanted, they wanted us to trim one of the trees that's above, like, the pool house. Fine. Like, they're worried about it falling. We'll do that. These both neighbors at two different times, not even in cahoots with one another, call my realtor, and they're like, hey, I think the survey is wrong for the land. That some of their trees go onto our property over our fence, so they need to trim all these trees. These trees are like 150-year-old huge oak trees. This property line, both people have lived in the home since 1990. Like both sides, they built the houses there. So you're coming at me when never speaking to me, never mentioning the trees once while I live there.
I'll tell you what,
until I leave.
Tree drama is crazy.
It's big drama.
Neighbor tree drama? If you go on tree drama,
well, because doing anything with trees,
it's expensive.
I think if you've never done it, It's so expensive. It's more expensive than people would ever imagine. It's so expensive.
So so our realtor is calling and she's like, hey, these people are doing it. And we, the tree guy's out there and he said it's going to be like $3,800 for this one. And I was like, you tell those people that I will FedEx my dick back to Texas so that they can suck it before I will pay $3,600 for them.
No.
And it's the type of person you have to be like, oh, this family is moving multiple states away. Let me see if I could get my trees trimmed for them by them for free.
All-time scumbag move. Yeah.
On both sides, man. And this one woman, she wears a muumuu, and it fits her perfectly. Like, she has that same the muumuu personality.
It's going to be me. Where,
no, I don't think you would do that. I don't think that you would never do this. Would crawl yourself up the tree at 80 years old before you would even say, like,
anybody. Yeah.
Even if my tree had fell on your house, you'd be like, I apologize that my house got in the way of your tree.
Fair enough. Fair. I'll be a moo-moo
smoke. No, but chaps, I mean, with moving, I don't think anyone's ever moved and bought a house and said to themselves, wow, I actually have more money than when
that
I started.
Was a great
experience. Like you just have to resign to the fact that it's going to deplete most of, if not all, the money you had. And you just got to deal with that and you'll make more money. But whatever, you got a nice house and you're in a great situation. So
let's not do positives. Oh, no, I'm not in the place where I want to do positives yet. I just want to just ruminate and just be validated that my experience has been fucking terrible across the board. That being said, we're not going to do a whole lot of military stories today. Cons, you've caused a lot of issues online since you've been gone. I don't know if it's just because you're bored, like your baby's sleeping a lot because your baby's so well behaved, like you said at the top of the show.
This is what it is. Mm. You're stuck. You can't move. All you have is your phone in front of you and a baby in your other arm.
Let me create some
You got
trauma.
Nothing going on. You're like, better stir the pot.
It's time to fire off some fucking tanks, baby.
You know the meme with the little girl? She's got like the smirk and the fire. Uh-huh. The house is burning behind her.
That's him while he's rocking his baby.
I don't know.
But yeah, you've been firing off serious. Takes. Cannoli, you said Italian cannolis and Italian desserts.
Yeah, let's go through them one
Italian
by one.
Desserts
let's do the
stink.
Italian desserts first.
Okay.
Whatever.
They stink.
Our
They're not good.
Nick
and Nick can chime in.
Yeah, Nick, come back on the screen. We need you for this one, pal. All right, so Nick's back on
and
the
listen,
line.
Listen, this is not an indictment on Italian cuisine as a whole, because Italian food is amazing.
I'd say top tier.
On the record,
number one
I
country
it.
Food. I'd say if I had to pick one country for food forever across the board, it's Italian by a long shot.
I'll say this: the mixed plate of cookies is never that good, but the cannolis, come on.
Cannolis, one out of 10 times are good.
Wait,
if something's only time out of 10.
Before you go, Cons, I need. This is normally I wouldn't do this, but I actually there's an integrity violation happening in the room right now. Kate texted me. I told her I wouldn't say, but I feel like I have to. Right after she had tasted the cannoli that Nick brought in, she texted
I'll
me.
Murder you.
She texted me. This isn't something that I could ever let Cons know, but the cannoli was a little dry.
Nick, I didn't say that.
Let me.
Fine. Yes, she did.
No, she wasn't being funny. She said it off herself.
Stop. It was fresh filled. You know what my mistake was? I went with the chocolate cannoli, Nick.
Oh, here
I
we
can't
go.
Even look at
here we
me.
Go. Don't ever tell Cons, but the cannoli was not great.
No.
Needed to get off that
thank
my
you.
Chest. The shell was a tad stale.
Wow, exactly.
Shell.
And that's how most
shell.
Cannolis taste.
Nick, I can't look at you.
The bar is so low.
I can't look at you. I ate the whole thing. No.
Well, you're pregnant. Of course you did.
So it was good. I'll say that.
But here's the deal. This is what I've been saying. So like this almost like it almost reinforces my point. It's not something that you can have like that cannoli traveled through New Jersey Transit.
Yep.
Was
you
picked
right.
up at 9 o'clock in the morning. Spent the entire day there. Was not refrigerated because I was going around the office. This type of stuff takes it. It needs to be held like handled with care.
Yes.
These are high quality stuff. These cannoli are filled upon pickup.
You would think that a culture that picked up and moved and dominated a different area of cuisine would be better at traveling than the Italians.
Sure, but I'm talking New Jersey.
But you're right. Fresh filled. They have to be fresh filled.
It's a 6 to 7 hour clip. That those are sitting there, and it's supposed to be served cold, not hot.
Now, here's another thing. So my issue with Cons is that it just came out of nowhere. Uh-huh. Like, no one asked for this opinion. Yeah. And then excellent you just point. Like, where are the all the special, other though. Cultures showing? Mm-hmm. Like, where are all the other cultures showing up with their desserts? They're nowhere to be found because none of them put up. None of them show up to the
Irish
table.
Irish potatoes there are none. Stink. I'll tell you that. What you does? Know, what you I'm ever saying, had the dessert Irish what I'm, potatoes? It's like,
I didn't know that was a dessert.
What I'm saying is people were like, oh, what about Southern stuff? I was like, that's not a nationality. Like, I understand that, like, ice cream is better, like, clearly. What I'm saying is that we actually show up to the plate with something, right? And then Cons just literally, like, no one asked for these opinions, just like, these stink. And I'm, like, reading this stuff, and I'm like, you really have nothing to do right now. You're just trying to take down the entire...
What? Like, so what's like, the Irish admittedly. Star of the dessert table? What's the Irish star? Is there
you know, one? Cons has no leg to stand on there.
Like, no. I'm not about to take up for Irish cuisine. But like I said, listen, you know why the Irish don't have food? We had bigger fish to fry, all right? We had to deal with a famine, and then we had to come over to this country. We didn't have time to worry about what food are we going to bring because we were busy building the country. I was with Large this weekend. His father, straight off the boat from Ireland, came here at 19 without a pot to piss in and made a wonderful life for himself building skyscrapers in Manhattan.
That's neither
that's
here
the
nor
Irish
there. Let's
doing.
Get back to the dessert.
Sinking the Titanic. No. Sinking the Titanic. And this is kind of the last thing that I'll say on this is just that, like, I don't know. It just felt like an uncalled for shot. And mm-hmm. I also admitted right away, I said, we're not the best at it at all. I'm not saying like that. I'm just saying they don't like stink. Like to say they're just right. like atrocious.
I mean,
crazy. Because what
you're
going to
tell me that plate of cookies is good?
I'll still eat them though. What? That's the thing. I'll still eat them.
Yeah. But I think the point with the Italian dessert is that they don't have to, you don't typically have room for it either. So it has to be something very small.
Or you're dipping it in coffee. Like, everything is by design. You don't eat these. Yeah, you're not sitting on the espresso. Couch watching TV, eating a plate full of Italian cookies.
My
you're typically
Aunt Peggy,
pairing it with something, or you're dipping it in something.
My Aunt Peggy, instead of a wedding cake, she's Irish. She married an Italian guy. They, instead of going course. On a honeymoon, they were going to get a boat called Gaelic and Garlic. And at their wedding, instead of a cake, because he's so Italian, they got a giant cannoli, like a 3-foot mega shell cannoli, stuffed with tiny cannolis. And I was drunk enough that I ate like
that's pretty cool.
of them.
My wedding cake was half cannoli, half cookies and cream.
Cannoli,
and everyone loved it.
Tiramisu is Italian, right?
Of course,
yes.
It is.
Oh, well, then that
is great.
Tiramisu is again.
Yeah, that's
a phenomenal. Tiramisu, another example where when it's good, it's great, but most of the time it's not good. Most of the time it's soggy and not good.
That's any dessert. I think that's any dessert. Like, you cheesecake, a bad cheesecake is fucking horrific.
I got
but a good cheesecake is amazing.
My goddaughter got baptized in Philadelphia, and I cheesecake. Was super hungover. And afterwards, the whole squad went over to Buca di Beppo, and the tiramisu was so soaked in, what is it, rum?
Yeah, I think yeah. so.
Took one bite, threw up a little bit under my own. Listen, I was so hungover, I wasn't expecting that much liquor to be soaked in the tiramisu.
In my initial response, I said, when they're bad, anecdote. They are bad. But if it's done right,
much,
it's done right.
And
that's typical
much.
Cuisine. Now. And anyway, the name of this episode will be Kate Lied. And
yeah, that was disappointing.
Thank you. I appreciate your honesty, though, Kate.
What was another one, Nick, that he had?
Another take, like a general take?
Oh, yeah, just a bunch.
The food, specifically.
Yeah, he had a bunch. All right,
well, listen, I remember what they were.
You probably had a roll of
that. Oh, you do? Okay, let's go through them, yeah.
All right, number two was the argument about Stephen Che, or anybody for that matter. Being able, not anybody, but Stephen Che specifically, thinking he could complete a pass in the NFL beyond the line of scrimmage, which I just thought was absolutely preposterous. And I've talked to multiple NFL, former NFL players, some of whom will, you know, ultimately be in the Hall of Fame, who are like, yeah, no, he has no shot at ever doing that. So I wasn't wrong on that one either.
I don't think you are either.
Stephen Che believes in himself so much, I feel like he could get to the moon if he wanted to. Something about the guy.
So that's... I was talking to Dan about Stephen Che.
Somehow
and
that's what
he's like, you can't knock the guy's confidence.
No.
He is irrationally confident.
The guy's unflappable.
Because that at least that gives him a heads up advantage, I guess, because he thinks that he could do it. Like, if you go in there and you same exact like physical makeup, same exact physical attributes as Stephen has, and he thought that he couldn't do it, there's absolutely no chance. Like, you might have .01 just because of the confidence.
Gets you so far in life. I wish I had it instead of whatever's going on in my head. I wish I see people with the blind confidence where I'm like, I'm not even mad at them. I'm not even annoyed. I just wish I had that.
Yeah.
Goddamn.
No, you're absolutely right, because I think part of the one of the elements of the of this challenge is the idea that you're going to go into a stadium filled with 80,000 people against literal monsters on the other side of the ball and be able to do this. You need that level of confidence. That's, I mean, if you go across the board, quarterbacks in the NFL, one quality that all these successful ones have is a lot of confidence. And that's not just in football, but I feel like most aspects
of all those guys on the NFL rosters have confidence for a reason, because they're talented enough.
Exactly.
I think you get the pass off. I think you would also die. I think it would be both. I think it'd be a healthy mix of both.
So that was one. My next one was, and this one got a little twisted.
Before we move on, any sport that you feel like right now you could walk into and you would feel the least embarrassed if you had to play professionally?
Curling.
Like, just for one day, curling's a good one, yeah.
I'm good at
But
brooming.
One that requires, no disrespect to Pete, that requires a lot of athletic skill.
No, God, no. No.
I think baseball.
I can't even speed walk.
I think baseball is the sport that I could play, because
that's a good answer.
People strike out all the time. I could throw on the uniform, stand there, look like I know what I'm doing, and just strike out. That happens all the time.
I've been playing this game with my son, who's 2.5. We watch baseball, and Pat will ask him, is the next one going to be a hit or a miss? And he called at a game. He got like 7 in a row right.
That's what you do.
Is it illegal for a baby to gamble? Is that?
That's what you do at games.
I don't know how to talk that. Oh, yeah. I sit there, and I'm like, he's going to hit it. He's going to miss it.
Oh, this one's going out to right field. Yeah.
But anyway, at some point, I do want to talk about the North Korea guy. It's on my mind.
Yeah. Well, let's do it. One more, Cons. What was the other one?
The last one, and this one got a little twisted, as things are wont to do on the internet. You know, saying I had rules for fandom of college sports, when in fact, all I was saying was, unless you fall into one of these categories, I think people will just inherently look at you a little sideways when you tell them why you're a fan of a particular college. Not, I wasn't saying like, have at it. You want to be a Notre Dame fan and you have no tie to that university whatsoever, other than you grew up watching them on TV, fine, have at it. But you just need to know that when people ask you like, oh, how are you a fan, and you give them your baloney reason, they're going to be like, oh, and
see,
in their
think
head
that's
they're thinking
a, it's false,
well, that's
logic
complete.
There because you are on the assumption that people are judging the reason why people are fans. So I think that's the difference.
I think people do that all the time.
You do?
I think people do that all the time.
Oh, I
yes.
don't. I never.
I think people.
I guess maybe the only time I think that really comes into play is somebody like Hubs, that's a Yankees and Packers fan. Like, when that happens and you're like a Yankees Cowboys fan or something like that, like two of the big blue blood fans,
yeah,
and they
you're
don't
like,
make any
happen?
Geographical sense. I think so. But if like me, I did get some weird looks when I said I was like a, a Spurs, Braves, Jags like fan, because it's all over the place. But then I explain it why.
And ultimately, ultimately, none of that matters. But I was just saying, like, I think if you fall into one of these categories that I laid out, it's just a lot easier to root for that school, and as opposed to just coming up with a fugazi reason as to why you root for that college.
Yeah.
So those were the three big ones that I can recall that got me into the Twitter streets, some arguments. But it was great because, honestly,
kept
it was keeping me busy.
Yeah.
Today's show is also brought to you by Cross Country Mortgage. Buying a home can be one of the hardest things that you have to do. You need the best support available. Get through it. Trust me. I know if you've been listening to the show the last month, you have known that the issues buying a house has been otherworldly. The only problems that you haven't heard me mention, financing. None of the stuff that financing has been an issue at all, because Cross Country Mortgage has been so great. They're dedicated to getting you to your dream home and will stick with you in the trenches until it's done. Cross Country Mortgage has a team of loan officers dedicated to getting it done and finding you the best possible loan terms available. They have an average close time of 21 days, which is wildly fast. They've got a wide variety of loans, which means they've got everything to cover everyone, with a huge variety of products. They cover everything from renovations to refinances and everything in between. Cross Country Mortgage is dedicated to getting it done for you. You can get a rate quote today, and CCM will send you some Barstool swag as well. Go to crosscountrymortgage.com/barstool. If you need more information about Cross Country, just go to ccmlens.com. Again, that's CCCMLens.com.
What was it last week? July 18th. I'm scrolling the Twitters or whatever, and I start to see reports, because obviously North Korea is on the other side of the world. But I start to see...
You're on X, by the way.
What does that mean?
You are not on Twitter.
Oh, yes. Because it's Twitter doesn't exist anymore.
Is it really? Oh, where have I been? My goodness. I start to see reports of a U.S. citizen crossing the border into North Korea.
Mm-hmm.
And didn't know it was a troop, didn't know anything at first. And I'm like, oh, my God, what a wild move. And one of my first thoughts was it a former North Korean who had escaped and like wanted to go back or something like that? Like, was it something crazy, some kind of spy thing? I don't know. And then the report started coming out that it was definitely a U.S. citizen, and then that it was a U.S. troop. And the whole story is just absolutely crazy. There was so much false stuff coming left and right. But now the United Nations Command and North Korea have begun discussing the case of Travis King, the U.S. soldier who crossed into the North last week. And basically he did it to get out of trouble in the U.S. King, a U.S. Army private serving in South Korea, sprinted into North Korea on July 18th while on tour of the demilitarized.
No, you see, you messed it up too. We can't say it. Let's try it again.
No, I said demilitarized.
Who's demilitarized, that TikTok girl? Yeah. The D'Amelio
demilitarized.
Big issues here. And so he had gotten trouble in South Korea. They were sending him back to the United States. They had dropped him off and escorted him through the airport. And then the second they were like, okay, he's getting on the plane, bye. And they turned around, he dipped and went back into South Korea and somehow got himself. This is what I want to know. How did you get on that tour of the DMZ? I know they give them every day. There was a ton of people online being like, yeah, I've taken that tour when I was in South Korea. But it's no small feat getting on it. They said there's still a lot of like hoops you got to jump through. And that zone, it's like 18 acres of barbed wire and buildings and landmines and guards on both sides and all kinds of things. Like, how the hell did that happen?
This is going to make a fantastic documentary.
Yeah. The primary concern for us is Private King's welfare. They're saying in a media briefing, the conversation has commenced with North Korea through mechanisms of the armistice agreement, referencing the North Korean People's Army. I can't say anything that would prejudice that process. And literally just the day before this happened, Kim Jong-un's sister issued a warning to the U.S. like, stop acting up, you know, because we've been having ships going through the seas up there, blah, blah, blah. Nobody do anything crazy. And literally the next day.
To be fair, they issue those warnings like all the time. Yeah.
The incident comes at a
time. That's like just a Tuesday in North Korea.
It's also another, yet again, heightened tension time in the Korean Peninsula. Last week, North Korea conducted ballistic missile tests hours after a U.S. nuclear-armed ballistic missile submarine arrived at a South Korean port. It was the first such visit since the 80s and served a blunt reminder to the North that Washington always has nuclear-tipped missiles within striking distance. Tours to the border truce village, formerly known as the JSA, the Joint Security Area, were suspended after King bolted across the border.
I wonder why.
Yeah. People joining those tours, which are overseen by the UNC, need to sign up way in advance to get approval and are supposed to follow strict rules, including what they can wear for the tour. So again, everyone's asking, like, how the hell did this guy get on the tour?
Beyond this, how he even got there on the tour or whatever, I think this is a really interesting look into the mind of very lower enlisted folks. And maybe this is the case of, you know, any
more
person 18 to 22.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, we were all 18 to 22 at one point, but listen, really quick. Is they have a problem. And it's like they reach a solution, but it's the first solution they get to, and it's the one that's closest right in their face. So this guy's presumably got a problem back in America, doesn't want to redeploy back to America. He's like, I'll just run to North Korea. But then they never go beyond that. They never think about what happens if I do X, and inevitably they find themselves in a situation like this kid is in right now where, I'm in North Korea, and they don't just let you turn around and go back because you might have went the wrong way.
I understand with this story, everybody's trying to be real nice because the kid's captured in North Korea. But this kid's a fucking idiot. Like, and I think people are so scared to say it. This dude's a fucking moron. Like, if you are a troop serving in South Korea, your main responsibility is looking at what's going on in North Korea. If you spent any time at the DMZ, you know that's exactly what's going on. I don't care how young you are, how immature you are. If you live in America and you are in the military, you know North Korea is bad. I probably shouldn't run the fuck over there. Yeah. So people are being like, oh, well, let's make sure that he gets home. Okay, I understand that. I was for Bo Bergdahl coming back. I was for all those different things. But this guy's a fucking idiot. Like, he left, went out of, not just, it wasn't like he got drunk and stumbled across because he's living at the barracks.
Right.
And went to a place that he went to. He went to extreme lengths to do this.
Yeah, this is pretty calculated. And again, it was because he was in a South Korean jail being held on assault charges. And then transferred over to the Army to be flown back to Fort Bliss. And so, again, I just have so
many
questions.
Maybe the worst edition of Good Initiative, Bad Judgment of all time. Like, it's not Good Initiative. It's incredibly bad judgment. And what do you do? Like, there's other Americans that are there that were caught being journalists or doing, like, God forbid, like, intelligence work in North Korea. And now the State Department has to focus some efforts on this. And the thing about this case that really got me was thinking last night, I was reading before we did this show, you know that most major news networks haven't even posted an update in 3 days about the story?
Really?
I believe like, that. I haven't really heard about
no
it.
Because no one
I
is going to give a fuck in 3 or 4 days. If he was grabbed by somebody taken in North Korea, people would care.
Yeah.
If it was a wartime prisoner of war, people care for about a week or two.
Yeah.
You do it on your own accord. It's just like Bo Bergdahl, where no one gives a fuck. And honestly, why should they?
Right.
Why should the American people be super concerned about it? Why should you put any of your diplomatic capital into getting back somebody who did this? As an American and as a human, I don't want somebody, anyone to suffer in North Korea. But it's a hard, like, the rally the forces around and get SEAL Team 6 together to go get this dude just doesn't seem prudent.
Well, and it's impossible. That just
it's
cannot
impossible.
Happen.
Yeah.
That he's just there until they. But I think, too, my thinking, I put on my old Katie Lance Corporal hat, and I was trying to channel what his thinking was, and I can see. This would be my thinking. Say that was me, and I was in a South Korean jail.
Things really spiral. You have a bad week. I could see this.
I'm super hungover. I'm in a South Korean jail. I'm about to go back to Fort Bliss and have to, like, brasso doorknobs for 3 years or something in the brig. I'm like, if I can get over to North Korea and make them think I got some important knowledge or whatever, and that I suck a North Korean dick on, not literally, but I'm
no,
like, you guys are the
takes,
fucking best. And I'm like, you guys can use me in propaganda films. I'll go on tour around the country and say how great you guys are and how much America stinks. They're going to treat me like a king.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't I do that instead of go to the fucking brig down at Fort whatever in the boondoggles of the United States? So I think this guy must have thought he could go to North Korea and, like, live a life of luxury there for the rest of his days.
Possibly. Or he was like, all right, if I get myself captured, they'll be so happy that they got me back. They'll completely forget about all that other stuff that I did wrong. Yeah. And boom, problem solved.
Like, I wonder what he's doing. Like, what do you do? Because there's an intake process. Like, if you go to jail, there's an intake process. What is it like when you run across the DMZ and you're captured by North Korea?
I also couldn't believe that he didn't get shot.
Remember
when when the North Korean soldier ran away and he made it to South Korea?
He left the barracks and got into like a Humvee and like
raced
I think he got shot
border.
Like 4 or 5 times.
They shot at him like 500 times or some crazy shit. And now I know it's different with someone going in, but I still, it's such an intense finger on the trigger border that I can't believe he just was able to run over there. And I love the thought of some North Korean private being the first to encounter him, being like, what the fuck?
See, now that person is probably over the moon. Because if you're like, hey, Gunny, American.
Yeah, American.
Look at this guy. His name's King. It says on his shirt, it's King. We got him.
I know.
You're going to get like a NAM. You're going to get like a letter of appreciation.
At least a little no shave chip
maybe
for a day.
Maybe a chicken nugget.
Something good.
You guys know we're all about keeping it real. So let's talk about something making a real change for vets and active duty right now. Zyn nicotine pouches. If you're looking for a new way to enjoy nicotine, America's number one nicotine pouch comes in 10 varieties like wintergreen, spearmint, and coffee, and 2 strengths, 3 milligrams to kick off your experience and 6 milligrams to take it up a notch. Zyn is smoke-free, spit-free, and hands-free, giving you more freedom to move. Plus, it comes as is. No batteries or devices needed to get your Zyn on, which is one less thing to worry about on your next trip to the PX. Look, when it comes to making a change, we know progress is more important than perfection. Zen knows it too, because everyone's on a different path. If you're curious about what a premium nicotine experience looks like, head to your local convenience store, PX, or Zyn.com to find out. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
I don't know.
Be dope.
I don't know, but I just well, so, a crazy story. I don't know what they're going to do.
We'd like it on record. We hope he comes home safely and nothing happens. But God, is this kid just an absolute idiot for doing that?
Him and Bo Bergdahl actually are going to start a podcast. Did you know?
Yeah.
They're going to start a little, a little AWOL pod.
And so I left.
So there we were.
What a brutal, brutal trip. Also big in the news, Oppenheimer. Did you guys see it?
No.
Not yet. I want to, though.
Speaking of Stephen Che.
Yeah.
He went to see it, and he was like, it was a little science-y.
A little depressing.
It was a little serious. Wasn't into it.
I was reading a lot of the stuff after Oppenheimer and like how he felt after whenever they got the report that it actually had happened and the atomic bombs both went off.
Yeah.
I don't know how you could possibly keep going as like a normal person of knowing that the work that you did caused
that much destruction
of multiple hundreds of thousands of people.
I think you would have to look at the flip side of the coin and be like, well, it ended the war and
there was
more people got like, I feel like you just have to look at it.
No, that's good. That's good rationale. Kate.
A different way.
Yeah. And I don't know if they talked about it in the movie because I haven't seen it. I think I'm seeing it this week, but he said that Oppenheimer had talked to Truman after it happened and that Oppenheimer told him that he was having trouble sleeping. He was having like, he felt like he had blood on his hands.
Yeah.
And Truman went back to his aides and they're like this. He's like, Oppenheimer's kind of a pussy, like that this is what ended the war. And it's I was reading all different things like, how are we going to talk about this where it's like a fresh take? So I was actually looking at like the lessons plans from like Stanford University, from MIT, from all these places that do have the kind of engineers that would develop these types of weapons and look into being like a nuclear physicist and shit like that, and the process of what they go through in their brains
figure out what you're going to do. 100,000 people, including babies and women and children,
and
died
that was
as
the
a result of this. And instantaneously. And the suffering that comes from that and the fallout.
And then
blah, blah.
Decades and generations and seeing what goes on. I don't know how you get that report and you see the destruction of Hiroshima and Nagasaki and you can just keep going on with your
again, I think you have
life.
To tell yourself, like, this is what my country asked of me. This stopped the war. This, like, I feel like you have to be able to look at it from both ways. I don't know. But
and they said it was almost like in the news, like a lot of those articles that I was reading, it only took like 6 or 7 days for the American public to kind of start being like, oh my God, like once the images come. But at the same time, this isn't like the Iraq and Afghanistan war where you have 6,000 people that died total, like American citizens on a foreign land. This was 6,000 people are dying every couple hours, like in these
right
wars.
Yeah, so you got to stop, you got to put a stop to that somehow. To your point, Kate, we needed to find a way to stop this. And I'd go so far as to say that because we were able to see what those weapons caused and that level of destruction, nuclear bombs from anybody, nuclear weapons have never been used. I mean, it's weird because we stockpile them all over the world and to include the U.S. Yeah. But it's weird that we even
we're
have them.
Gonna again. We're forgetting.
Yeah.
Enough time has gone by.
But we haven't. We haven't. So maybe that was the lesson learned. Like, we don't want to ever get to this point where we inflict this level of destruction on any nation, regardless of what they've done to other people in the midst of a war. It is kind of crazy, Chaps. I'd imagine there's a moral aspect of those lesson plans. Like,
sure,
all right,
yeah,
we're
that's what
teach
it
you,
is. And that's, and it's
we're
going
to teach you
thing.
How to do this, but be careful.
Right. And I don't know how you continue to, cause you can't make both points, like the nuance that's involved and the hindsight being 2020 of something that happened 75 years ago. At this point, it's impossible to really think about what you would do. Cause if you are seeing events like Iwo Jima, you're seeing like Wake Island and all these places that are tens of thousands of deaths in every battle, and not just military members, because there's more civilians that died in World War II than military members. So you have all these people that are dying, and you know you have to do something dramatic. And you see that the war effort in Japan is already on the decline, and they probably would have won the war anyways without it. But knowing that that's like an emphatic last point, it feels almost dirty to look at it from like a moral perspective and being like, well, this is, these deaths were caused to prevent this amount of death. Because you don't know if that's the way that that feather falls and caused the, like,
right. I mean, even you're saying, like, you know, it was probably trending that direction, but at what cost? Was it trending that direction in another month, or was it going to be another 2 years of fighting and X amount more of American casualties, soldiers, airmen, Marines that we would have lost? So, I mean, wrestling with that, I could understand how, you know, the guy might have lost his mind and, lost a lot of sleep.
Truman said, I told him that the blood was on my hands. Let me worry about that. Like, it's not on you. This was my decision. I ordered you guys to do this, essentially.
Which is good leadership by Truman.
Yeah, until the end
of his life. Yeah, I was going to say, I respect that. Yeah. I respect that ownership.
Till the end of his life, Truman insisted that he suffered no agonies of regret over his decision. And the pungency.
I don't know how that part is possible.
Yeah, I know.
I feel like that's a lie.
Right. Because even W says all the times that he, like, will go back and forth. Did he do the right thing? He did what he felt was the right thing at the time. But you're telling me two atomic bombs, the worst two horrific events in human history, you're like, I went home and made a sandwich. Well, like, come
I
on,
mean, if that's the case, then President Truman was a sociopath.
Yeah.
Well, he was. There issues. Was supposed to be one more bombing, but he ordered the halt of it on August 10th, 4 days before the emperor surrendered. And the reason, according to a cabinet member present at the meeting, was that Truman didn't like the idea of killing all those kids. Was it right? Truman didn't like the question. Historians of war would ask him about it. And was it necessary? Was it right? And basically, he's like, you could argue it all day, but the war needed to end. Blah, blah, blah.
And just the selection process, because there wasn't just President Truman and Oppenheimer in a room deciding which cities that they were going to bomb.
No, yeah.
Like I was reading last night, there was essentially six cities that were in Japan that they had identified as possible targets based on the geographics, the way that the land was, like, construction, like, it needed to be flat, needed to be not too high elevation. And one of them was Kyoto. And one of the guys that was in charge had spent his honeymoon in Kyoto. So they passed over Kyoto. Like, imagine.
Wow.
That's, because he had a great.
It's not tactics. It's not any of that stuff. It's, I had a great time on a honeymoon.
I had an emotional tie to that city.
I knew people.
Wow.
Because it's been so long that you don't look at the human element of what. But I could see that if you're making a decision and how terrible of a decision that is to make.
But I guess that's war. Yeah. Like, the people who best. The people who best cope with it, whether right or wrong, are the best able to disassociate.
Yeah,
during those things and important. To separate those things. Like, I don't know.
And then you have that.
No, that's it.
Go ahead, Cons.
I was just going to say that person, I mean, he probably said to himself, well, I made the right decision based on that rationale. Like, I'd been to Kyoto, I'd met people there, but these other cities, I don't know anybody. So that's why I'm going with that choice. And he probably can live with that.
And if that's the same, like if you were like, hey, these couple of cities that you've lived in are going to be options, or you could pick Amarillo, Texas. I'm like, well, I've never been there.
Right.
So like, yeah. I don't know what's going on there. It's an impossible decision to make. And even in like the vacuum of making decisions, I don't know how you do it, man. Like, I don't know.
Well, the weird thing to think about, like, again, I'm not even arguing right or wrong. This, say anyone in the world, it was any country that Oppenheimer was from and created the bomb for that, you know, killed 100,000 people. Say you're Oppenheimer 10 years later and you're in the kitchen having a Taco Tuesday with your wife.
Right.
And you're like.
Hey, you remember that time?
And all of a sudden
killed,
it hits
you.
Like, you're like, oh, yeah,
people.
My brain helped kill 100,000 people. Honey, pass the salsa. Like, it's a weird, like, it's. You do just, I think, have to completely disassociate your brain. And
is it possible
to continue
like, I don't,
enjoying life in any way?
How many people do you guys think are in that decision, like to actually drop an atomic bomb?
I think it's more than like two, but it's probably not as many as we think.
Right.
Just because I think
number.
The more
let's
people
do,
you get involved, the harder it is.
What do you
is.
Think? Real, like within like 5 to 10, how many
I
do you
feel
think?
Like
nine people. I'm
maybe,
saying it's nine,
nine
people.
I think there's maybe one person who once they've decided it, everyone else is going to go along. Like, there's one specific person somewhere in that pentagon shape that once they've decided that everyone else is going to
see,
go
I
with
think
it.
That there's probably, I would say 500 people that are involved in like the decision of where it's going to go, how it's going to go down, what type that you're actually going to use, because they had multiple types of weapons at their disposal. It wasn't the same type in both places. One was plutonium, one was the other fucking one that they did. It's two different types of bombs that they use.
Uranium, maybe?
Yeah, uranium. So trying to figure out all those different aspects together, I just can't imagine that picture that they have of the Bin Laden raid, for example, where like Hillary and the Joint Chiefs are all in there. Was that the same type of situation that was happening right before they dropped both of the bombs? Did they have Truman and a bunch of other people sitting in a situation type room where they're going over what's about to happen? Like, do you talk about pre-battle assessment, post-battle assessment? Like, how many people are we going to send in to figure out what does post-damage assessment look like after this is all over?
What if we find out it's just the president and the top general of the nation? I'm on ZBT. I should know who that is. You know, whoever the top military guy is. And they're in the very center of the Pentagon, and there's a secret room under the—
talking about the Secretary of Defense?
The hot dog. There's a hot dog stand way underneath, and there's a maze, and there's a yes on the right side and a no on the other side, and they just put a gerbil in there.
Yeah.
And they're like, okay.
Kind of like that octopus during the World Cup.
And that way, that way, it's no blood on anyone's hands. A hamster decided that.
Oh, yeah. Kill that hamster. You got to fucking kill
that hamster.
That hamster
was fucked up for what happened in Nagasaki, man. That hamster was fucked up.
And the vacuum. Last thing I'll say about this. The idea of our decisions in a vacuum, because— one, Hiroshima and Nagasaki happens and all these people die. But that didn't just happen overnight, you know, like where they're just like, oh, well, let's just shit an atomic bomb that we can use.
Yeah.
Like all the different practicing, the facilities that they did in like New Mexico, the tribal people that had to be removed from their lands that experienced all kind of radiation effects for generations after.
Oh, yeah.
Like all these decisions. I mean, you wonder what the total amount of death that happened
after. It's been heavily downplayed. But a lot of people, because the movie's out now, a lot of people from, like, elementary schools in New Mexico where, like, every single kid got leukemia. Like, there's all these crazy stories
coming out. Right, that's
what I
mean.
Where, like
nothing in
a
vacuum. And you don't think about how it all, like—
The Hills Have Eyes. I feel like that was loosely tied to, like, nuclear testing out in New Mexico.
SpongeBob.
Yeah. I don't know, man. Chaps, you're right. When you think about it on that scale where how many people are involved along the way, that number gets probably pretty high.
Even as like a troop, like when there's atrocities, like what Duncan Hunter talked about on this show.
Yeah.
We were in the same exact AO. We were both in Fallujah. Yeah. The things that he did is not it's definitely not what I did, but I'm impacted by the things that he did because we were there together.
Right, yeah.
Like I wonder what it's like for the troop that it was – the one that put it on like a truck to load it on to the bird that dropped it. Like all the different mental pictures that you have to go through to think that you played a part in that logistics supply. Because it wasn't a pilot go to a base and just picked it up by himself, hauled it there in a wheelbarrow.
Right, yeah.
So many people. How much did that affect the people that were involved in this process?
You're right. A ton of people down the line. And speaking of, and God bless, I say this with love, 99% awesomeness. I can't believe we haven't accidentally blown a nuke up somewhere in the U.S.
Oh,
yet.
Yeah.
I cannot
believe.
Yeah,
that's a good point.
Yeah.
I took an explosive.
Thank God. 6,900 of them bad boys.
I cannot believe that hasn't happened yet. I took the explosive driver's course where part of it is they show you this video compilation of, because there's cameras everywhere at all these bases, and they show you mess ups of like a forklift trying to load some missiles into a thing, but they accidentally tip over the wall. Like, I can't believe we haven't done that.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Sometimes in life, we face some tough choices and the path forward isn't always clear. I mean, again, I hate to keep bringing up my move, but that's what's been going on. And I've been telling my therapist about it. It's been incredibly stressful. You got the finance side. You got kids going to school. You got switching job locations. You got all kinds of stressors that are going on. And you just need to help talk to somebody. You need a little bit of help. And there ain't nothing wrong with that, my friend. I need a lot of help. Whether you're dealing with decisions around your career, relationships, or anything else, therapy helps you stay connected to what you really want while you navigate your life so you can move forward with confidence and excitement. Trusting yourself to make decisions that align with your values is like anything. The more you practice it, the easier it gets. And if you're thinking about starting therapy today, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. You can find your balance with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/zero today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/zero. Again, that's BetterHelp.com/zero. Seriously, try it out. If you've been struggling, or if you just need to talk to somebody, or if you're not struggling and you're just kind of doing a little maintaining, you can do that as well. Everybody needs to see the brain dentist from every now and then. You might as well start with BetterHelp and do it for 10% off your first month. It's a great deal. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/zero.
Sorry, last thing I'll say, and this is, I think, to along what you were saying, Chaps, to think about all the people involved. Think about this. Think about all the sailors that were aboard the USS Indianapolis who were carrying parts of the bomb there.
Yeah.
And then that got hit, and then they had to deal with all the shark attacks. So imagine you survive that, and you have to wrestle the rest of your life. Not only did I have to carry parts of the bomb that decimated these two cities, and then I have to go through the horror of living through a shark attack for days on end, not knowing if I'm going to survive that. That would be very, very challenging, I would imagine.
Yeah, and the part where Oppenheimer and them had all the different formulas like figured out about what would happen if it was a 15-mile-an-hour wind with a little bit of rain. They didn't do that with computers, man. Like, they didn't have simulations that could do it. They just did it with fucking pencil and paper.
Dude, like, I love that. Like,
how did you figure out that this would work?
I look at my intelligence, and then I look at that, and I'm like, I'm not even the same species. There must be a different species.
I don't
species.
Know how a microwave makes popcorn and doesn't kill me.
Every time I'm in how a plane, I'm inside? Like, I don't know how we're up here. Right. I don't trust it.
And these people forget are like, oh, let's see. If I carry the four here, that means that, oh, yes, 120,000 people will perish.
Those
instantly.
Women got us to the moon with like 50 stacks of paper.
I know.
How?
Or that lady who wrote the formula of how to look inside a black hole, and it's like 15 feet high stacks of paper.
I still use my phone to do tips because I don't understand how decimals work.
Yeah, too many people are asking for tips, by the way.
It's crazy.
It's out of control.
It is out of control.
Yeah, but it turns out we uncovered a lot, that the moral conundrum of the nuclear weapon is a difficult
one.
It's
quite the pickle. I think you got to disassociate and say, hey, and end of the war. And I think it's the same thing that, not the same thing by any level, but when I was struggling with Afghanistan and blah, 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 it's like at the end of the day, I can keep going around and around, or I can say, I did what I thought was the best thing at the time, and for the people to the left and the right of me, and I did my job and I did what was asked of me, and like that's all you can
Monday morning quarterback yourself 24/7.
Yourself.
You just can't do it. You get that one Monday and then it's over. Like you can't like ruminating on it. But again, we're talking about ruminating on not tipping somebody, not killing 300,000 people.
Potato, potato, potato. How much do you think he made? How much money do you think he made?
Oppenheimer?
Total? Yeah.
Oppenheimer?
I mean, I think they got like $200 million on opening weekend. So.
Side note, driving around, I was heading to Target yesterday.
Oh.
And I passed Chicago has a pop-up Barbie bar.
Cool.
Line around the block. It's a neon pink warehouse with like whatever line around the block of whole city in pink, dogs in pink, cars in pink. Everybody's pumped for that. So I feel like mentally I got to stick with Barbie on this one instead of Oppenheimer. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I never saw either, but I want to. I want to see Barbie more so.
Bunch of guys at work did both in one day.
Barbenheimer, right?
Barbenheimer.
Yeah, that's like the Barbenheimer, the big double feature.
That's so long. Those 6 hours at the movie theater is a little much.
And you have to go Oppenheimer first, Barbie second.
Yeah. You need that other
palate cleanser. Can't go
it's
the
like
other
the
way.
Bernie Higgins of the movies right
exactly.
now.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, sorry, really quickly, because I just have two things. I don't know if we're doing save rounds, so I'm just going to just mention these two things
let's
now.
Let's go into save rounds.
Because we were talking about World War II. Did we ever make any mention of Stanley Rubin on the show?
That he passed away?
Yes.
Oh, I don't know. I think
I don't think we did. And in case we did, I just want to do it again.
Okay.
So Stanley Rubin was one of our early guests, for those who don't recall. And this gentleman was so impressive. Chaps and I were interviewing him, and I put interviewing in quotes because essentially we just sat there and listened to this man retell the story of fighting at Iwo Jima. And it was so, so powerful. And he was so detail oriented. And
especially
really
knowing that he had never really told the story before.
Yes, that was the other thing. We heard from his family after the fact that he had never really mentioned any of this, maybe a couple things in passing over the years, but never to this level of detail. And he passed away last month. And, you know, our we send our condolences and our prayers to that family. He really, it's funny. People ask me all the time, like, oh, who were some people that you interviewed that you really thought were good interviews or really cool? And I always mention that interview we did with Stanley Rubin. Mm-hmm. So I highly encourage anybody to go back and listen to that. Because the other thing too, I think, you know, we're talking about Oppenheimer as an example. Like, there are so many stories throughout World War II that are like the well-known stories that we all hear about, but there's so many thousands of stories of just individual soldiers and sailors and Marines, endless. Yeah. Yes. That are just never told on any sort of scale. So I would highly encourage anyone to go back and listen to that interview. It really is good. And then the last thing I'll say, I would like credit, you know, in my time I've been away and dealing with everybody and putting out takes. I was man enough and I had integrity to admit when I was wrong on something, when Chaps called me persnickety. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wait a second. Persnickety means like you're fussy about stupid minor details. I'm not like that. Maybe I am a little bit, but I don't think that's what they're trying to say. But then Chap showed me an additional definition where persnickety also means you're a bit of a snob. And all right, fair. So.
Yeah, I felt like I nailed that one. And it was just so easy since he was saying he doesn't know what the definition of the word was, just to do a little screenshot. So I do know what the definition was.
That was good.
And I also feel like you admitted that I was wrong when there was absolutely no other place down that alley for you to move. You just had to come back.
It was either,
you just had to come back from the direction you came from. Yeah.
Well, I would like to counter what you've said to Chaps and just shit on him again for outing me for the cannoli. Nick, I still ate the whole cannoli. I still enjoyed the whole cannoli. You're right. It's got to be fresh off the press. It's got to be. If you ever see a pre-filled cannoli in a store, don't waste your money. They got to fill it
right
there.
You throw it right in the garbage.
And you got to eat it pretty quick.
I give you permission.
I'd rather have lasagna for dessert at an Italian meal than a cannoli.
Oh, you're wrong.
So wait, sorry, Chaps.
I can't.
I know it's still early. Your opinion, I'm sure, will go in waves on this. Being in an office 5 days a week, what's that been like? How's that going?
You know, I drove to work the second day and was smiling so big, like on the way, just because I don't even know if I realized probably the damage I did to my own mental health just by being alone.
In your basement all day for 5 years?
11.
11, yeah.
Since I got out of I went to school, but most of it was online too. Yep. Like probably 90% of my classes were online. Yeah. And then since I've worked here, like, so it's been years since I've been interacting with other people. And not just that, but I think my mental health here in general is going to be so much better. Yeah. Like, because you walk outside, Cons, you know, being a Fort Hood guy, you walk outside there in the summertime and you're instantly sweating. You're miserable. Yeah. All you think about doing is getting back inside. That's where you want
to
be.
You don't plan things to do outside.
No.
Because you're like, I don't want to be outside.
It's your winter.
And I would get pissed if my wife would put something on like our social calendar or whatever where
it's
I had to go be
hot.
Outside. I didn't want to. But waking up on Saturday and Sunday, walking to a bagel shop, like my neighbors in my new neighborhood are fucking awesome.
Yeah, you're somewhere walkable now with like a main area. You're
we've
not
eaten at
your
a neighbor's
basement.
Like 4 nights since we've been there.
Hell
like
yeah.
Four different dinner nights at different people's houses.
That's amazing.
And it's just been great. So I think the mental health side of it is going to be even more impactful. And plus, everybody's funny that works here. So being around people that make you smile is also good.
That's wonderful.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, that's
and we're here.
Being
I know.
In the same city, it feels weird.
Chaps lives about 15 minutes from me, and I was actually driving my son to get him to take a nap the other day because his schedule with the move is all crapped out. And I was just driving, I guess it's west, and down this main drag, and all of a sudden I saw signs for your town, and I was like, oh, I'm in Chaps' town. And I was like, if I pass him and he sees me, I'm going to feel like a psychopath. Like, hello, Chaps. I mean, you're whatever. So I turned around and beelined it back to the city where I belong. But I do know where you live now. No,
oh, wow. Well, yeah.
Yes, yes. Anyway.
I mean, that's kind of rude of you, Chaps, to say that Dale and Gus aren't funny and didn't make you laugh at all at any point.
Baby
but whatever.
Dale's going through it right now. He is.
New house is tough for an animal.
The new house is. Sprinkle Dinkles, man. Poor Dinks.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I said it on the last podcast, but Annalise, when they were flying up here, when Annalise and McCartney were flying up here, there was a tornado that was like circling O'Hare. And it was the first time in decades that a tornado had touched down like just outside of O'Hare. So Sprinkles was on that flight. Like so much turbulence.
No.
They had 4 hour delay, 4 or 5 hour delay in the airport. So Sprinkles just hanging out in the United Lounge.
Yeah.
Like so much. I'm telling you, the move couldn't have gone worse. But where we ended up is, I think, is exactly where we need to be.
It's a good spot.
Yeah.
Well, good.
You got any say, Brown?
Stuff.
I'm trying to think. I will say we were at a McDonald's somewhere along the way. Again, I've been crushing those frozen Fantas.
89 grams of sugar, Cons.
And I'm
out.
Drinking about four of them a day. That's a problem. That's so I didn't know that. Sugar, maybe now man. All. I didn't know that.
That's a ton.
And Pat and Cash went to walk over. It was like next to a truck stop on the other side of the parking lot. So I was like, welcome to go look at the big rigs. I couldn't leave the cat in the cage on a picnic table. So I'm like in this weird yard next to I-80 behind a McDonald's, kind of in the woods on a picnic table. And this big, like nondescript type moving truck pulls up. And these two guys get out without shirts on. And they are like greasy, long hair, smoking cigs. They go in and they're like, hey, lady, you dropped your pocket. And I look down and they're like, ah, we got you, Goose. Because gotcha. I looked for my pocket. You can't drop your pocket. And then I'm like, whatever, that's weird. But I'm alone out by this picnic table. And then they came back over to me. And I'm like alone behind this McDonald's with my cat. And they're like, are you here by yourself? Ew. Are you here, whatever?
Are you serious?
I swear Jesus. To God. And I was like, and then.
Nope, I got my cat.
No, it's just me and my Tommy gun.
I said, no, I also have this. I pulled up my shirt a little bit. McMap.
Oh.
Tan belt. Wow. My web belt. I had my web belt on.
Flare that
so
heel
they
at
knew.
Him.
No, I didn't. But,
casual hip toss.
No, I was like, my boyfriend's right over there in that big rig. He's going to be right back. Blah, blah, blah.
His name's Death Trap.
But they were like, is this cat going to, but they were like sticking their fingers in my cat's cage. They were like, I was like, what the fuck is happening?
See, right how now? Does it, wow. Like this type of stuff only happens to
me. I know. But seriously. Here's the thing. This is how I know I'm going to die someday. I was like,
well, that's guaranteed.
I was like, yeah. I don't want to hurt the
feelings. Yeah, we all are.
So I was just so not, I was just like, doo, 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 doo. But in my head, I was like, I might get murdered behind this McDonald's. It was very exciting. And then okay. They were like definitely on drugs or something. They were like not.
Oh, yeah. I think that's
fully...
part of the course. If you're a mover, I think that's like you're doing a little meth.
Yeah, the stimulants you're taking.
Big
yeah.
time.
Absolutely. Because you got to make those deadlines.
My God, I never felt like such a big pussy watching people move
shit
your
into your
stuff
house.
Is the laziest I've ever felt in my entire life. Like, just like, hey, that's my stuff. Can you put it there?
Yeah.
Because any other time you never have people doing things for you in your own home. So they're mm-hmm. like moving everything around. I'm like, this feels.
I just
shitty.
Kept pointing because I was alone that day that they were moving the stuff, and I kept being like, I would, and I would point to my belly and be like, I can't. And they were like, you can
I'm
stop
helpless.
Apologizing to us. You stop apologizing. Duh.
And not to mention that
okay.
you paid for it. So.
And I paid for it. Too. Yeah. You should have seen the tip I gave because I can't math. They were very pleased. I had to go to like six different Shell gas stations around here. I had a hippie pack literally
because you were bringing out the max. Let's use like $400. You went to several?
Buddy, you don't want to know that tip. You don't want to know.
I don't want to know this tip.
You don't
want to
know.
No, we need to know. Let's just,
what was it?
What do you think is a reasonable number?
All right, so let's say, let's.
Well, I mean, you're talking about going to multiple ATMs.
Let's establish a baseline of how much.
I had to call Navy Federal.
All right, so you.
I kept shutting my card down.
Establish a baseline of how much you paid for the move. So I would guess, did they pack for you too?
No.
Okay, so probably 8,000, 8 to 10,000.
Talking around, all total move is about $6,000.
So I think 1,500?
Oh, so I'm not crazy. I did about $2,000.
I
it was
saying,
three guys.
I was saying $1,500 for the insane high side. You tip $3,000?
Yeah. No, two.
Two on a six?
They were.
You tipped a third.
They were three guys.
That's
they
a
were,
big tip for
you
a
you gotta love those 30% tips.
When they were packing,
that's
they kept fist bumping my
haircut.
Son. And also, we were such a disaster. That I felt like if I
Kate,
did
can it. I just say, and this isn't like a shot at you, like, you know, you weren't moving from like a six bedroom house. You didn't have that much stuff. So
I know. But for a whole day, I was cruising around Chicago with a hippie pack full of $2,000, like
that feels
a giant
money.
Wad.
Yeah.
And I was like, now's the time to rob me. If you want to do it,
go
do
back
it.
And hang
Nobody
out with those other Russian
enough.
Movers.
Nobody was smart enough.
Yeah. Oh, that was a move.
Okay. Anyway, whoops. Well. I'm just you know, you ever hit a point where you're bleeding so much money, you're just like, fucking take it.
Yeah, right
bend
now.
Bend me over.
Yep. I didn't even ask how much the tree trimmer was going to cost. I was just like, I okay.
Cut him up.
Just fucking go cut it. Do the other ones, I guess, right. too.
Oh, yeah. Well, hey, Chicago.
Yep. So we'll be back here next week. This is the new setup. Me, Kate, in studio. Khan's hanging out. Going to be back at his. When do you go back to your normal job?
Next month sometime.
Hell yeah.
Well, enjoy, buddy. Enjoy it.
Don't rush back. There's no reason to rush back for anything.
Nope.
Ever. Because no one cares.
Good advice.
Yeah.
Great advice.
No one ever cares about you. It's on the retreat.